Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by C.W.B. and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 26. Kimi. Seek. With the deadline of migration looming ahead of them, Sherlock and John find it increasingly more difficult to focus on their lessons and daily routine. Discussions regarding the stolen seal tooth bubble up in fits and bursts are shared in whispers at night in the creche while they swim as they eat. They are vigilant about not talking about it in front of those who are unaware of the situation. Unfortunately, this includes everyone except Mycroft and Erebus. Meeting with the two elders frequently is necessary, and perhaps due to the nature of their training, no one finds it suspicious that a small group of them meets apart from the others. No one, of course, except Moringa, who finds every reason to linger when she sees the party of four shuffle off for yet another meeting. When she asks them point blank what they are talking about, Erebus informs her that they have formed a subcommittee for the evaluation and analysis of trends in the rapidly evolving dynamic of penguin slang amongst the juvenile set. He does this with a straight face and concludes by saying that she was not included because she would have nothing to contribute given her age. He stops short of calling her a peng geriatric. Sherlock and John are sure to ask the other juveniles their thoughts on Emperor's slang just to be sure their cover can stand up to interrogation. Mycroft resorts to assigning Moringa extraneous tasks that will keep her out of their feathers. She does not even pretend not to be miffed as she sets off to assist Cetus with a lesson on pus removal. On the morning of the fourth to last day, the slang subcommittee swims to a nearby ice floe to ensure maximum privacy. They are well in sight of Cassiopeia and will notice if anyone else approaches. Mycroft leads the discussion with a brief overview of the last 3 days. They have reviewed the legend several times, scouring it for any fresh detail. They each know the story inside and out by now, but have garnered nothing new. They considered including some or all of the other elders in their efforts, but shut down that conversation under the assumption that if Moringa is in cahoots with someone else, the traitor could be planted on the senior council. None of them believe this to be true, but neither are they willing to take the risk. Besides, Mycroft suggests, to ensure confidentiality, they would have to include everyone except Moringa, and how would they present and justify that? They have debated the likelihood that the legend is true, and that the seal tooth stolen from the ice cave is indeed the tooth from the legend. They have agreed that they must take action, regardless of the answers to those two questions. To not do so, and be wrong, would be catastrophic. They have come up with and abandoned no less than 6 plans for retrieving the tooth. John, despite the 3-1 vote against his idea, continues to propose that they stab Moringa in the head with a gigantic icicle and search her for the tooth. He suspects she has it tucked up high under her wing, but when asked, cannot explain how she could swim with her wing permanently tucked against her side. Erebus speculates that she swallowed it. John counters that she would have eliminated it by now, adding that she'd be a complete moron to risk internal injury or lose it while swimming. He then reconsiders what he knows about her, and decides Erebus may be right. Sherlock suggests she has shoved it where neither sun nor moonlight can shine. Mycroft refuses to participate in that particular conversation. They have summarily dismissed the idea that they simply approach her and ask for it back, proceeding with force if she refuses to cooperate. They suspect that she has the tooth. If they confirm that they know, there's nothing to stop her from using its inherent power, swiftly and without remorse, to her advantage. Unless, Mycroft reminds them, she has hidden it somewhere on the iceberg and does not have it on her body. Mycroft then revisits the only option with which they all concur. It is unlikely that she has it on or in her body. If she has hidden it on Cassiopeia, They must find it. The four of them have studied and memorized a map of the berg that Erebus had scraped into the ice. They each have one quarter of the iceberg to search and have been doing so as frequently as time allows. As acting council leader, Erebus devises a way for the four of them to search without raising suspicion. Each morning, during the first group meeting, all of the emperors are recruited to help Cetus look for items that will assist him in treating any injured, returning colony members. Although a thinly veiled ploy, as there is next to nothing on the iceberg, Cetus gratefully accepts the gesture and provides a short list of materials that he needs. He explains that some of his supplies are available in the water upon which they float. The first day, Erebus sends Sherlock, John, Lestra, Malling, Anthea, himself, and Mycroft to survey the iceberg. He sends Vela, Pavo, Moringa, Cetus, Janine, Irina, and Stamford into the water. He shuffles the lineup each day after that, but tries to keep as many of the junior pangs on the ice as possible, surmising that they would notice a seal tooth, whether or not they were looking for one, and would eagerly show it to the others. They've done this for the last 3 mornings, and have acquired 3 skua wing feathers, good for lancing infected wounds, a few scrapes of Antarctic shag droppings, useful as an antiseptic, 6 Hymenopterus grandifolius leaves, a seaweed used for wrapping poultices and rehydrating dried and cracked bills, and 7 fish bones, necessary for setting broken bones. They have not found a seal tooth. Now, assembled on the ice floe, John asks if they have a backup plan.
"It's just that we only have 4 more days until we expect the first wave of pangs to return. And then what do we do? You've already said that we can't risk losing Moringa to the open sea, as there's no guarantee that she will return to Pobeda. Do we have some idea where she might go?"
"It depends on who she is working with, if anyone, and where that co-conspirator waits," Mycroft explains, "and we have no information whatsoever pertinent to that eventuality."
"Can't you just say that you don't know?" Sherlock quips.
Mycroft ignores him.
"We must keep in mind that she may be in league with another emperor, another species of penguin, or a different sea animal, utterly unrelated to the class Avis."
"He means not a bird," Sherlock says to John.
"Or she may be working on her own. Furthermore, she may not actually be engaged in any troublesome behavior. We mustn't overestimate her motivations or her intelligence. For all we know, she scooped the tooth up of the rest of your trifles and tossed it into the sea, completely unawares of what she was holding."
"Trifles!"
John lunges at Mycroft. Sherlock restrains him just before the ice floe tilts precariously out of balance and dumps them all into the water.
"He called our treasure trifles. Consider the source, John Ling. He likes to eat fish eggs."
"Ew."
"Right?
As I was saying," Mycroft continues, carefully inspecting a feather on the tip of his wing, "we are not closer to knowing Moringa's role in the seal tooth caper than we are to knowing if penguins ever did fly. The tooth, whatever its origin, may be forever lost to us."
Oh, how Sherlock wishes this were the case. He yearns for that simpler time of his youth, just 6 moons ago, when there were no unjust accusations against him and John, no spiteful robberies, no legends of revenge and power-laden teeth.
"Whatever the case," Erebus adds, "we have already agreed that we must respond as if the very worst-case scenario is in effect. Therefore, we find the tooth in the next 4 days, or we need a backup plan. There is a good chance that Seeger will arrive with the first pod. No matter what our circumstances at the time, we must debrief him and seek his counsel."
The other 3 pangs agree. Sherlock wishes his father would show up now and take all of this off of his shoulders. He has not told John about his conversation with Mycroft regarding his shell's prophecy. He doesn't know what to make of it. He doesn't know how to act on it. He's lost in thought when something John says catches his attention.
"The only ones looking for it?"
"I'm sorry, John. Can you repeat that?"
I said, how do we even know we are the only ones looking for it? I believe she knew exactly what it was when she saw it, so we can assume there are others who would recognize it too, and who are probably looking for it.
Erebus nods. You raise an excellent point, John. According to the legend, Ica granted his power to a seal. Certainly the seals have their own version of the legend, and their role in it. Perhaps the seals are looking for it too.
Yes, Sherlock interjects, but it could have been any type of seal, even one of the 50 species that are now extinct. Maybe their legend died with their kind.
Mycroft furrows his brow in a way that Sherlock chooses to interpret as, holy pang, my brother is astute.
This is useless, Mycroft says, which certainly does not fit with Sherlock's interpretation of his brother's expression. The entire ocean may be seeking the truth. It doesn't matter. We need to focus on one penguin and one iceberg.
I disagree, Mycroft.
Well, of course you do. Isn't that what you're here for?
No, I'm serious. Hear me out. If there are others looking for it, we can find them and we can work together.
Mycroft sighs, an exhalation that lasts forever and ruffles Sherlock's feathers.
We don't have the luxury of time, Sherlock. Please let us concentrate on what we know, which, to be honest, is nothing.
Remember this moment, Sherlock whispers to John. He'll never admit that again.
They conclude the meeting and dive back into the water, each of them frustrated and worried. The swim back to the iceberg is short, and when they resurface, John and Sherlock see their friends gathered around the swimming hole playing Lestra's ice chip game. Diving after ice chips bores Sherlock now, because how many times can he be both the fastest retriever and the last to find the melting speck before it ceases to hold any amusement at all? Still, he follows John to the swimming hole and watches the others play. When it's Sherlock's turn to dive, Lestra suggests that they even the odds by giving him a handicap of a longer count.
Fine, Sherlock yawns. What's my new count?
200, suggests Irina.
I'd like to end the game before dinner, but thank you for your input, Lestra answers. It's 3 for everyone else, so how about 10 for Sherlock?
Fine with me, he says.
Slightly less boring, he thinks. Lestra tosses the chip into the water, and by the time he has counted to 8, Sherlock has factored the weight of the chip, angle of the toss, speed of the drop, and the force and direction of the sea's current into a computation that solves for the trajectory of the ice chip and the distance it will have traveled by the time he enters the water. Lestra hits 10, and Sherlock dives. The chip is exactly where it should be, and he bullets his body through the water in pursuit. He snags the chip in his bill, swoops up, and looks toward the patch of light shining through the swimming hole. He is much further away than usual, thanks to the higher count, but by his estimation, he will win this round anyway.
Boring.
He ascends, noticing as he flies through the water how much of the Berg's keel he can see at this depth. It hangs in the murky silence, massive, an inverted cone of silvery blue plains, upside-down peaks, and shallow caves. He adjusts his trajectory slightly, moving closer to the otherworldly walls of the submerged mountain. As he closes the distance, small fissures and crevices become visible, a network of webbing etched into the otherwise smooth surfaces. Some are mere suggestions, but others widen into small canyons. Fascinating. He slows, thinking about how happy the others will be when he loses the game. And then, out of the corner of his eye, he sees it. 2, maybe 2.5 orca lengths below the surface, a discoloration mars the opaque white on white. The spot looks about the size of a dragonfish, not quite as long as his wing. He swims closer. Upon further inspection, he realizes that the mark isn't part of the iceberg, but something caught in a thin crack. Seaweed, he observes, but that can't be right, because if seaweed snagged on the ice, some of it would still be floating, reaching toward the surface. He is flush against the keel now, and he prods at the caught material with his bill. Definitely seaweed, and Hymenopterus grandifolius to boot. The same type they collected for Cetus to augment his healing supplies. This seaweed appears to be wrapped in a tight ball and wedged into the narrow space. The ice chip on his tongue is long gone, and he'll need to resurface soon, but he plants his feet on either side of the odd parcel, grips it in his beak, and tugs. It barely budges. He pulls again and again, his feet slipping and sliding. He digs his claws just inside the opening of the slit in the ice, grabs as much of the water plant in his bill as he can, and redoubles his effort. The wad pulls free, and Sherlock plunges back. He circles his wings to stabilize his position, and the seaweed unravels, sluggish, as if it's just woken from a deep sleep. He watches the way it spools away from itself, grace in slow motion, until there is one long stretch of it, the end still anchored in his bill. There, from inside a curl along the edge of the ribbon, something scant, trifling, releases and begins to sink. His wings propel him even before his mind has made the connection, and then he has it, flat against his tongue, protected inside the walls of his mouth. He arcs, he pumps, he shoots toward the swimming hole, where surely they are wondering what's become of him. He pierces the breach, torpedoes through the air, water sluicing off his back, and slides on his belly until he skids to a halt beyond the 6 staring emperors. He does not turn around to face them. He closes his eyes, parts his bill only enough to breathe, and sucks in lungs full of air. Behind him, John calls his name, his tone full of concern, questioning. Still, he doesn't turn around. He lets John approach, waits until John is tugging on his wing, trying to spin him, but still he does not turn. John huffs, exasperated, and walks around Sherlock's side, finally facing him. "What the Hades do you think you're doing?" Sherlock uses his feet to tap the signs for wait, look, and opens his mouth. John's confusion lasts as long as it takes for him to look inside, and then his bill falls open too. Sherlock bends forward and presses his cheek against John's oral patch. "It wasn't on the iceberg, Johnling. It was underneath it." Notes. Maori translations. Kimikimi. Verb. To seek, look for, search out, seek out, hunt for.